welcome to the Learning and Development Podcast. I'm David James from Loop, and each episode I chat with guests about what lights them up in the world of people development. In this episode, I'm speaking with Katie Kaposa, who led talent, learning and OD for Disney in the Asia-Pacific region, whilst I did the same in Europe. But before we get into it, if you're enjoying this podcast, please do give us a 5-star rating on your podcast app of choice to help others to find us, and thank you if you've done so already. Now, let's get into it. Katie, welcome to the Learning and Development Podcast.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Now, as I mentioned in the intro, we're old friends and colleagues going back quite some time. But for the benefit of the listener, could you tell us your Disney story?
Yeah, well, I was there for 25 years, so I'll try and keep it as quick and tight as I can. But I started as a college intern. I had always wanted to work there as a kid. And so worked in Orlando, Florida, in the hotels. And then I just stayed there and I thought I was going to be a general manager of a hotel. And about 6 years into that went, no, I didn't want to do that. And transitioned over to human resources and learning and development. Cause I actually preferred taking on employee, or in my case, cast member issues versus the guest issues. So spent a time in learning and development, doing college seminars, new hire orientation and leadership development. I spent some time in Hong Kong Disneyland when that was opening and building their learning and development infrastructure, and then spent 5 years in workforce insights and analytics, which was quite the pivot, but I enjoyed it immensely. And then after that is when we bumped into each other, was when I moved over to Shanghai to lead the learning and organizational development function for Asia Pacific. So across the whole Asia region and also including Australia. And then eventually landed in Singapore as their head of HR while still doing the learning and organizational development. And then my final days there were at the studios in Burbank, California, doing learning and organizational development and analytics for the whole collection of the studios, as well as the Broadway group, the live entertainment group that's out of New York. So that's my 25 years in as quickly as I could do it.
Now the listener will not forgive me if we don't go deeper on that. So that's what we'll spend the time on today. Now there are going to be few better places than you, Katie, to answer the next question. How would you describe L&D at Disney? And I suppose just as insightfully, how did you see it evolve and change in your time there?
Yeah, I mean, it's intriguing, right? So through all that journey, for your listener who doesn't understand kind of the dynamics of the enterprise structure for Disney, I worked in three business segments. So, and all three of them were a different experience when it came to learning and development. So in parks and resorts, right? And then I don't know what the number is now, but at the time it was over 120,000 employees that I had to help figure out learning and development for, scattered around the globe, some of them on cruise ships, some of them doing tours all around the world, and trying to figure out how do you get a consistent learning experience to those individuals, knowing that they have to be packaged in different ways.
Yeah.
And from a parks perspective, I describe it a little bit as being militaristic because, you know, with that many employees, you've got to drive really consistent messaging and really consistent standards because you're trying to create this guest experience for whatever kind of aspect of the guest experience they're doing. So I always talk about in parks and resorts, it was more about consistency and scale. Yeah. And it was really hard. The thing that we always said there is it's hard to turn a ship in a second there. And so decisions were slow because you were trying to convince a lot of people on a methodology and a message for whatever that learning experience, whether that was leadership development or whether that was new hire onboarding or whether that was technical skills. And so it was really hard to drive things fast from a decision-making perspective. But once the decision was made, you were off, and then it was all hands on deck and you were trying to do it. But I don't necessarily say it's where my most creative work was, because you're really just trying to, it's all about driving this consistent experience, not only as an employee, but what you're trying to create from the guest experience. My experience, which it'll be interesting for you to comment on this, because I think you and I had some, a little bit different nuances in Walt Disney International because of the markets that we were in. So Asia was a growth market and people were pretty scrappy and were like, we, you know, anything is better than nothing. So like those years were, I was able to be pretty experimental and, you know, people are like 80-20. I was able to throw things out there that were like 40-60. Like it was an idea. Let's go experiment with it. And there was budgeting and funding to do it. So I could throw something out there. Oh, that didn't work. Let's go back and fix something. Or, you know, I could get a topic and get a bunch of people in the room and just start talking about it over, you know, here, we're going to bring an article. We're going to talk about it. Okay. So now I better understand what you're struggling with. So now I can go get a better learning experience for you. That's going to be more rewarding. So to me, like those 3 years were my experimental days. And then the studios was just, I was thinking about this morning, actually. It was like a convergence of three different forces pushing on us. So there was a desire to be more cutting edge, more experimental, kind of bring the learning to the people in the way that they want to digest it. But then there was a lot of traditionalists there that were like, no, well, I want to know your plan from A to Z, and I need to see everything, and it needs to be buttoned up and it needs to be perfect. They would never use the words perfect, but that was the message. And then there were individuals who really wanted to be scrappy and experimental, but when it came to trying to get broader leadership buy-in on that, the courage stopped there. So it just, to me, it was just very interesting because it depended on the business unit that you were in. It depended on what stage that business unit was in from a growth perspective. And it also really depended on the leadership and what their tolerance to risk and experimentation was. I cannot say it was consistent.
you asked me there how it how yours compared with mine, and Europe being a more mature market, and after 2008, there was no abundance. It was very different. And you saying how different segments. You worked in different segments, which, you know, can be, it could be different businesses, pretty much, you know, it's a matrix organization. And so, depending on, how much was brought in was how much, you know, you got for operational expenditure. And so, so looking after, first of all, the UK and then EMEA, there was real difference in what different areas could actually afford. But we didn't have the abundance. And so, but learning and development from my perspective, it was very much an event. People were nominated for an event, which was their experience of learning and development. And also, I'm really interested in your view here, with so much, definitely towards the end of my tenure, being driven from the US in terms of L&D. There was a high drive for consistency and of evolution, if not revolution, of the programs, but not so much with a desired outcome in mind, but very much about attendance. It was very much about either driving traffic towards the LMS, or it's about driving footfall into classrooms. But there was a real disconnect between what people experienced and what they were doing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think absolutely your comment about driving people to the LMS. In fact, a product that I'm working on from one of my businesses, I said, let me tell you what I learned about driving people to learning. But so I totally agree with that comment. The other piece with the programmatic aspect, I think is spot on, right? Like it was all about an event, because events made people special because they were nominated and they felt that. So there was a goodness to that kind of aspect, but it was still kind of that traditional classroom piece. The thing that I saw shifting a bit as I was leaving was it it was less about the L&D facilitator standing at the front of the room doing the learning. There was a shift to try and get more of the organizational or the organization's leaders to come and step in front and share their experiences, which I think were highly value. But the thing to me that was lacking is what you were talking about, right? Like learning is... I always laugh, like, I'm going to put you in a room for a day or 3 days, right? And I'm going to wave my magic wand and woo, you're magically transformed after that, you know, and you've got a bunch of people that are pumped up and, you know, changed individuals go into an unchanged environment and we wonder why nothing really shifted. So that whole concept of incorporating nudges and putting more informal gatherings or ways for people to learn in the flow of work wasn't there. And I think people, to your point, I couldn't count butts in seats and I couldn't immediately see the tangible impact of the learning. So the investment of time and money that it takes to put in the resources to create that culture of learning outside of the events was not a priority. And to me, it was a bit frustrating because that's where I was actually seeing the learning and the connections of, you know, people meeting each other across the organization to where they weren't having to go click on an LMS event to get their next question answered. They could pick up the person, you know, pick up the phone and call the person that was sitting in a lunch and learn with them or like an informal, like, meeting with individuals talking about we're struggling over the same thing and learning from each other. And so I think that's a little bit about why I ended up leaving. Not only one, did I had a drive to try and do something in social impact, but the other side was I can't keep doing this because it's not moving the needle in the way that I know the needle could be moved.
You and me both. We'll come on to mine a little bit later when I've got a more pointed question. But you and I both, I think that and what I always answer when people ask me about Disney is that I've never worked anywhere where you have such talented and driven people, which changes the dynamic of learning and development. When it comes to engagement, I think that the association that people carry with them into the organization kind of counters some of the managerial deficiencies because it's not needed so much. You don't need managers to drive excellence and drive performance. People, a lot of people bring that and drive that themselves, which is good and bad because, you know, on a bad day, if you've got managers who aren't equipped, and not all managers, I would even say, I would go so far as to say the managing leaders that I've dealt with, I mean, inspirational leaders and some incredibly caring managers, people that really did live and breathe the values of the Walt Disney Company, but not all. And I think that there were that what people brought with them into the job was did make up for many of those deficiencies. Is that what you experienced too?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know you and I both did some work around the engagement survey that, you know, happens there. And, you know, one of the things that I always say is that, you know, pride in Disney and pride in the role is almost always high. It's like a misleading data point because to what you said, people come in really like, I buy into this. This is what I believe in. I mean, that's why I joined.
Yeah.
You know, and so I agree with what you say, because when the pressure's on and then you start seeing people's real abilities, and how they handle and manage stress or how they handle and manage when something isn't, an absolute, you know, hit, whether that's content or an experience at a park or whatever it might be, the ability to manage that and maintain a really amazing environment gets a little bit harder. And I think those were the moments that we needed to provide people support and learning and resources and outlets for, because that's where the learning was going to happen. But, you know, I laugh today with my business partner. I'm like, I'm sorry, that's the Disney in me. It's got to be just right. And so, right, like, it's this dichotomy of, like, we're a creative company, But at its core, we're really a risk. I'm going to say conservative, but I mean conservative in the concept of risk averse.
Yeah.
And so at some point, right, like that's in your blood. And so there's like this push and pull. And I think, you know, for us to try and chip away at that from a culture perspective, learning had to be messy and imperfect at times.
Yeah.
And we were too busy trying to make it shiny. Now, that being said, there were some really amazing products that we did put out, and there were some great things. Clearly, I worked there for 25 years for a reason. But yeah, you know, when the world's getting scrappier, you know, we needed to get a bit scrappier, and that wasn't really in the DNA.
No, you're right. And I think that was seen in some of the acquired businesses saying they didn't want to be eaten up by the machine, as it were. So they wanted to maintain their culture and their innovation. I want to talk to you about parks. Again, it's one of the questions that I'm asked most about people, about how they actually train people there. And we had a little insight in Europe. We used to send some managers to Paris to experience an event called the Disney Way.
Yeah.
Part of that, they would dress up as a character. They'd take some training as a character. They'd learn the signature, and then they'd go out into the wild and experience what it's like to be there, and the reception you get, not just from kids, but from adults as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all pretty intensive, but that experience is created so that you feel that, you know, firsthand what this means to people. Now, that's only, you know, I think that they train for a day and a half to just go out there for just a few minutes. But I mean, what's the secret to developing excellence in the parks?
Yeah, well, so just to give your listeners some context on volume, and then I'll talk about the mechanics is, so I was in Orlando for quite a while. And when I led the new hire orientation, on average, 18,000 to 20,000 people a year that you have to put through orientation. Hmm. And that's not accounting to internal movement. So I came in and then I came into a job and I went to that training for that job, but then I might have transferred somewhere around the way. So then you've got 18,000 to 20,000 people plus the internal movement. So it is, when I say militaristic, it is a machine.
Yeah.
you come in, and all of the learning to what you described is about really reinforcing the impact of you as an individual have an opportunity to absolutely impact and change this family, this person's experience here. And we are here to create magic.
Yeah.
Full on. And so on top of that, then we're going to teach you how to do the job, because the job is the job. Right. But if you can't get that first part right, it doesn't matter. And, you know, from a Disney perspective, that is the differentiator between them and other competitors in the parks and resort space. And so all of the learning is about storytelling.
Yeah.
So whether that is about new hire orientation, whether that is about learning how to use a point of sale machine, whether that's about making beds, whether that is about serving food at like a quick service counter, all of that learning to be able to actually do the technical side is wrapped with just deep storytelling. So if you walked into the building that is in Orlando, the walls are covered with storytelling, like the journey of how we became, the journey of, you know, how the animation was developed, the journey of Walt, like all of those things are there. So you are living, breathing, eating, sleeping the storytelling, because once you go out there and interface with the guests, you're basically helping to create their story. And all of that is done on mass volume. And in multiple languages and in multiple places around the world and on cruise ships. So the big thing to that is frankly the storytelling and to be able to replicate that learning experience multiple times for thousands of people with consistency of message, so that everybody's going out there and with the one mission in mind of creating happiness for people of all ages everywhere and having it be in a safe environment. So it's a lot, but once you get it up, it's a machine. Yeah. It really is a machine. Now, one of the things that I would share, so leading orientation or what was called traditions, is every year we picked new facilitators. There was a whole audition process and about, you know, anywhere from 25 to 40 people, depending on the projections, were selected out of hundreds of people that would audition to teach orientation. So it was an honor to be selected to teach that first day orientation. And so that's another piece, right? Like you don't have people facilitating that have been doing it for years and are tired of it. And it's too scripty. You have people that really have dreamt of doing it and have worked really hard and have beat out hundreds of other people to be able to do it. Yeah. So there is a piece about that as well. I don't know. Does that kind of get to what you were looking for?
It does. I think that what I took from that is that it starts with the mission there and the shared value. This is about creating magic safely, like as you said, Yeah. So you've got the incredible experience and, you know, the safety, which is absolutely paramount for everything else, whether that be inspiring people with the traditions and letting them in on what the history is, what this means to people, what this meant for Walt and Roy and everybody, from there. And then from what I understand, then you've got your militaristic, you know, this is what happens when. But it all comes from that guiding mission overall.
Yeah, I would say I was working with a client in one of my other jobs post Disney, and you know, of course, they were very intrigued about, you know, how we did things from a Disney perspective. And one of the things that I said is in the learning and development and the training, we took out, in essence, frivolous decision making that employees would have to make. So, for example, right, like you find yourself in a situation and you've got three competing things, and on their own, you know that when this happens, you have to make sure that the show and the way everything looks stays maintained. Secondly, oh no, but there's something with safety, right? Like, so I have to make sure people are safe. Oh, but wait a minute, it's not efficient to do this. It's so, right, like you have these three competing priorities. And so, like, part of the orientation is about here's the kind of the order of importance to us. So when you are in a situation that puts you in a place where you have to make a competing decision about like safety or courtesy or show or efficiency, right? Like here's the order that you need to do them. And so after that, right, you can kind of let them do, because they know the value of their role and how important it is to the experience. They know how to do their job, and now they know how to make decisions. And if you can give them that, you've given the ability to have freedom in a framework. So you've given them the boundaries, and now they can kind of do unique experiences for guests because they know kind of the priority of decision making. And so I think that was one of the things from a parks perspective that was kind of, it was simple, but brilliant. And it stems way back of like, we're just going to give you these little morsels of knowledge. And some of them even have songs attached to them. And so you can remember them. So when you're in that moment, you know, right? Like, I'm going to choose safety over anything else. Yeah. You know? And then I'm going to choose courtesy. Right. So I think that was also the thing, you know, especially when you're training masses of people, like simple and just like helps them be able to navigate their day. And the rest is the job, right? It's just packaged in all this other stuff and fun costumes.
So I mean, first of all, and that is a complete answer. And thanks, Katie. That's what I was looking for. But then move forward. So that's fully established. So you're drawn in Orlando, and that's fully established. Then you move to Asia Pac, and that's when I met you. You're based in Shanghai.
Yep.
And then whilst I was in London looking after Europe, and I did come out and see you, and we spent the week, didn't we, in Shanghai. And so I know firsthand that it's completely different. Can you shed some insight into what it was like then leading L&D in Asia Pac when Disney's building a reputation and a brand and its experiences, and you're hiring people and developing people to support that?
Yeah, it was interesting because when I was offered the job, I was told, right, like it's back to basics, right? Like you're building the foundation. So it's like, oh, okay. But they had been, and so when I went over, I went for Walt Disney International. So it was everything but parks and resorts. And so, you know, so, and they had been there well before there was a parks presence. So, you know, I figured there was some infrastructure there. There was no infrastructure there. I was like, oh, back to basics meant totally build. So, which was cool, right? Like you've got this blank slate, but you also have a culture that has a very distinct approach and philosophy around education and learning. And we're trying to develop and create an organization of individuals who can take their initiative, can be creative, can put forward ideas, can challenge ideas, like all of these things that are kind of innate within the Disney culture, but were counterculture to, if I think about Greater China in particular, were counterculture. And so, you know, it was totally experimental because, you know, all the jokes and the metaphors that you have don't work. so you have to find like a different way to get across the message. And, you know, you just discover that you navigate the content differently. So I knew that if I was just a talking head at the front of the room and imparted wisdom for 4 hours, that people would pay attention and be kind and look attentive. But I knew that the learning we were trying to get across wouldn't be there. So we had to completely redesign all of the learning experiences to have them much more group breakouts, much more dialogue and conversation. And so like one of the things for them was just the design of the coursework. So to your earlier comment about consistency across the enterprise and creating programs that had to be delivered in the way they were designed, it didn't work. Yeah. Like I had to dismantle everything. And there was a constant push and pull of, right? Like, well, but that's not how the class is supposed to be run. And I kept saying, what are the key learning objectives?
Yeah.
I will make sure the key learning objectives get across, but I can't facilitate or teach this class and get those objectives in the way that you've designed it. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the pieces. The other thing was things were just moving so fast.
Yeah.
So people couldn't catch their breath. And so to carve out, it was a very hard push and pull because learning and talent management and investing in employees was a priority. I had time on the executive committee's agenda, every one of their quarterly full day work sessions. Yeah. So I had access, I had support, but they were building infrastructure across the region. And whether that was Greater China or Southeast Asia or India, the only places in my remit that were kind of a little bit more kind of standard and kind of was Australia and was Japan.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't for a lack of want. It was just a lack of capacity in a culture where people will work until midnight, 1 a.m. And that's right. Like that's not creating the environment, the culture that we want either. So it was an interesting place to be because it did actually like let me get back to my scrappy design roots and kind of dismantle things and put them back together in a way that resonated. And it was fun to start seeing when the learning was clicking and you were starting to see people make the connections and get excited about it. But at the other time, right, like having all the support and actually having an ample budget, but just not being able to get people into the rooms because the growth and the speed of the business being developed was too much. So yeah, I mean, it's tough because you can see all the potential, but you can't, you're like, so you're right. You're like, okay, this full day experience, I'm going to put it into an hour and then I'm going to give you resources and we're going to come back in 2 weeks for another hour. Like you just had to start breaking things up in a way.
Yeah.
So to the earlier point, it actually did let me experiment more with nudges and more informal type of things to keep learning going because I couldn't get them for a full day. I couldn't get them for half a day.
Let's build on that, and this is one of those points that I mentioned earlier that I was going to mention here, because I want to talk learning tech with you, because one of the reasons I left Disney is that I never thought I could achieve what was really needed because we were hamstrung by technology. What I mean by that is that like a lot of organizations then, and may I say a lot of organizations now, they have a clunky LMS which is built for admin, which is not built for the end user, really. Yeah. And it's filled full of generic content. So it solves close to no problems that anybody's experienced in a Disney. And as we said before, our part of our job, and I've said it many times on this podcast, is spending an inordinate amount of time trying to drive traffic towards it to justify the investment. Because we knew, and everybody had ever been there knew, there was nothing in there or close to nothing in there that was actually going to help them with their jobs. I've told you what I think. What are your reflections on learning tech at Disney?
Yeah, how do you feel about that, Dave?
Still not over it.
still twitching a bit from it. I totally agree what you just said about the LMS. I keep calling it spray and pray. We're just going to put as much stuff in here and all it does is overwhelm the learner.
Yeah.
So then you end up going, okay, well, we got all this content. Now I have to point people to things.
Yeah.
And that's why I started doing these, like, you know, pizza and a topic, because I'd pull something out of the LMS that I knew people were like talking about as a need and start driving the conversation, because it's too hard to find stuff. I also think to your point, Disney is notorious for this, but also any of the organizations I've either worked at or have helped since then, it's similar, which is, did a whole user experience workshop around it and had like all these things mapped out. But then those of us that have to operate in it, like, make it all about the administration of it. And we take away from everything that we built in there. So I think there's that piece. I think LMSs, if used in the manner that you just described, are overwhelming, and they don't actually by and large make any. No, they make no substantial movement in learning culture and learning environment. I think the other thing that I was a bit frustrated about was there were some cool things coming out, from a technology around simulations and, you know, virtual learning environments and different ways to connect people and using technology, not just as a way to register for things or to get credit and to get your learning history, but to actually create a more diverse and blended learning experience and provide some different options, especially in growth markets where you can't get much time with people. I don't know. I've been gone for over 5 years. Like, I don't know, maybe they've invested in some of that stuff now. But that's where I was kind of frustrated, because you and I were doing this stuff around strategic foresight, right? Yeah. And exploring the future of HR and how we could do things differently. And so, you know, we're sitting in all these really cool ideas and things you could experiment with, and companies that were just building that technology and might have been willing to do some kind of partnership to where, you know, we'll experiment with it knowing it's not done, but right. Like you're going to listen to us as you're building that. Right? There were opportunities to do that, that I don't think the company was leaning into as far as product development, but from a human resources perspective, it wasn't necessarily the mindset or the approach of looking and leveraging technology from an internal processes perspective was just my feeling.
I think it builds on what we were talking about earlier. I think that that Disney being a conservative organization and legacy areas of Disney, perhaps HR included, were conservative. And I think in that is what I see now as an outdated approach to learning technology, which is because we think that online learning can't really make the difference that face-to-face can, the best role it can play is supplementing face to face. Therefore, all we need is an appealing looking platform filled with enough engaging content. And to say that was outdated is Well, it's an understatement to say the least. But like you, I've been gone a long time too, so I can only hope that that things have improved there as well. Which leads me on to my next question, Katie. What are your general reflections on L&D at Disney, and what would you do now with a clean slate and plentiful budget? So I'm going to make you the chief learning officer of Disney with 25 years of experience of working at Disney. Many of those in L&D, very few people will know L&D at Disney better than you. What would you do with a clean slate and a plentiful budget?
Well, I kind of had that, Anisha. I just said a different thing. I think, and I don't think this is actually unique to Disney, but I think there has to be a whole new philosophical conversation and dialogue around what learning is and how learning happens. There was an article, I'm going to forget the source, but it talked about in the flow of work. And I think, right, like you've got to have tools and resources available for individuals to tap into learning in the moments that they need it or shortly thereafter. And waiting for an event doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Or like having to sort through 3,000 pieces of content in an LMS doesn't do that. So I think clean slate, I would just want to go, learning has changed. Yeah. Technology has changed. The businesses have changed. The pace has changed. We have got to do something different. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean you're throwing all of that stuff away. There is a time and a place for events and for more formalized learning. And there are individuals from a learning style that is actually the place that they absorb and learn the most. But I think by and large, it's just not going to cut it moving forward. And so I would, I don't even actually think I would go build something right away. I would want to get the audience and the airtime to just talk adult learning and what needs to shift. And from there, then let's look at meaningful experiments that are going to let us see what people gravitate to, see what's actually having an impact, and be okay if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
and build from there. I also think I would want to find that balance between consistency and customization, because that was really, it was really hard. The key learning objectives and the key messages are what's important. The means and the methodology need to be flexible enough to adapt and adjust to the audience and the culture and the pace of the environment. So
well, can I throw in there then that maybe customization is the midpoint between consistency and efficacy, because if we're looking for some kind of consistency, because this is one company with a strong culture and strong values, and we're looking to do stuff that actually makes the desired difference at the outset, then customization is the what we use in order to achieve that, rather than necessarily customization being the end, because we'd all fought for customization, didn't we, in Europe. I mean you were saying there about Asia Pac, which I think is going to be a stark difference between perhaps what is being expected from head office. But even in Europe, where the difference wasn't as stark, there was nuance that meant that we weren't able to consistently deliver, but that customization would, which we did anyway, would allow for people to both recognize it and then do something meaningful that they knew was going to make a difference.
Yeah, I totally agree, because I think having a flexible approach to that and a philosophy around that, being really clear about who you intend to be as an organization, as far as a growth organization, and developing and investing in your employees, and then going out and building your infrastructure, right? Like, because the stuff's out there, the tools are out there, the technology's out there, the content's out there. But if you just go and grab it because you think it's what you're supposed to have in your organization, but you actually haven't figured out what you want to be, who you want to be as far as a developing organization, a growth organization, having learning in the flow of work, those types of things. If you don't know who you want to be from that point of stuff, they're all just They're all just solutions and you're spraying
just
and praying.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's stuff.
Pray, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So that's where, see, I haven't even spent a penny yet on my new learning and development organization.
Yeah.
Trust me, once we got there, I would spend away. But the, but I do honestly, I think that's also the misnomer for learning and development, that it's all, it all has to be super pricey and expensive. I think if you really actually find a way to tap into the learning that happens every day on the job and have leaders that are, you know, can identify those moments and take those moments to have conversations, like that's the learning environment, because the work environment is the lab. Yeah. There is enough there. Then you just have to have the resources and the technology to nudge and build on top of that, or to get people in forums to discuss their experiences, whether that's in person or online or through chat rooms or whatever it might be. Mm. But that's where you start seeing things happen. Again, like my 3 hours in a classroom with my magic wand is not going to move the needle substantially.
No, that's so right. Yeah, spend less time looking for and designing solutions and more on understanding the problems. What is it that people are trying to do that they're not able to do? And what are organizations finding a critical point of failure that they need some awareness or some capability with their people, work with the people, not delivering at them? What I found is that, that's the easiest way to do learning and development. But there are still people building curriculums close to blind based on learning needs analysis, which is a resource allocation exercise. It's not actually really to do with performance analysis. They're filling platforms full of content and they're wondering why people don't engage. And then they tell themselves stories like, oh, we don't have a learning culture. It's because the CEO isn't bought in. It's because line managers don't support it. It's because our people don't like learning. It's because people don't have time to learn. All of that stuff that, you know, I always say that this is learning and development, waiting for the planets to align before they get their perfect shot at behavior change.
Yeah.
I always say you have a different conversation at the outset about what it is that people are trying to do and they're not able to do. You find that engagement is the least of your worries. Now, I know learning and development is far more complex than that and that there are organizational drivers. But when you expect people to adapt and they know they need to adapt, that's the sweet spot of learning and development. But trying to get people to do stuff that they don't want to do because they don't recognize the value because it doesn't relate to their job. Now, that's bananas.
A curriculum that was built by, I mean, the other thing I would add to, I totally agree with everything you just said. The other piece is like the disconnect to talent management. Mm. So we've had all these conversations about individual, this is if you do well at talent management, right? So you've had all the conversations about your talent and who your high potential are and the people to watch and, you know, and who are the individuals that are well-placed but need to be invested in the most, right? Like all these things. And you've talked about the reasons why you've either plan to invest in them to be a successor for something or why they are not doing well. And the data doesn't, that information never leaves. And so you've got learning and development, building curriculum in a vacuum, absent of that information, and building it off of, well, somebody happened to be in a classroom and asked for, hey, it'd be nice if you did a class on this. So now we're spending oodles of time and energy building that class, but really what the need is here, because your talent management discussions have said, and to your point, if I'm building curriculum and learning around that, I'm serving a need not only to the organization and building the capabilities that the organization needs, but I'm serving a need to the employees who have been tapped and said, hey, you're our next leader and here's what you need to develop, or you're valuable to us, but you're not, like, we need to help you get up to speed or get into the right role. And here are the things you need to develop in there. So now you've got an organization's need and an individual's need, and you've built curriculum around that. I don't have to be screaming for people to register. They're going to register because there's already a need.
Exactly.
So sorry, that was my soapbox.
Well, I'm glad we sorted it. Maybe someone from Disney is going to rehire us. Katie, before we finish up today, could you tell us what you're doing now?
Yeah, I, Well, so I left Disney to work for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation because I really wanted to transition into social impact. And so, you know, had my inspiration sparked there. So actually spun off, I have two businesses now. So one is my freelance business called Disco Porcupine. And that's, I do talent-centric strategy. So I help people do what I just talked about, which is getting really, really clear on intersecting their needs from a talent management perspective with their business strategies. And then the other one is my passion project, which hopefully is my thing I do for the rest of my life, which is called House of Apis. And it's APIS. People always need me to spell it. And it's an organization that is focusing on opportunities for women and girls to invest in their self-development, to build a supportive network, mm-hmm. and to come together in solidarity for issues that impact that community. So we'll be launching our broader platform here in end of September, early October. And so check us out at, I'm going to put my shameless plug at www.houseofapis.com. So my learning and development heartbeat comes through, but now I'm focusing it on women and girls and gender equity and things like that. So thank you. Thank you for letting me talk about that in my passion project.
No worries. We'll do more, and we'll also put some links to House of Apis and Disco Porcupine in the show notes, so people can find you there. But Katie, awesome. Thank you very much. All left for me to say is thanks for being a guest on the Learning and Development Podcast.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. And it was great for, you know, to reconnect with you after a couple of years. So
thanks, Katie. Bye.
Bye.
Hopefully that gave you an insight into L&D at Disney, pulling back the curtain for good and bad, and helped you to understand what it was like working at the House of Mouse. If you'd like to get in touch with me, perhaps to suggest topics you'd like to hear discussed, you can tweet me at DavidInLearning, and connect on LinkedIn, for which you'll find the links in the show notes. And goodbye for now.